Welcome to the Hex Knight Podcast. I'm David.
And I'm Ivan.
And tonight we're going to talk about evil, specifically how to manage different types of primary antagonists, bad guys that are pulling the strings and making all the bad shit happen to the hapless villagers and damsels in distress and all that fun stuff.
Heck yeah. The big bad guy. And it's one of those things where it's funny because, like, there's an old saying for, like, movies that, like memorable movies always have, like, really cool and memorable bad guys. And a lot of times, like, people almost become, like, more fans of the villain than they do of the heroes. Like, you know, like, there's legit more dudes in Darth Vader costumes at, like, nerd conventions than there are Luke Skywalker. This is the thing. But we don't talk that much about, like, RPG villains, which is funny because, like, most RPGs end up having some sort of villain. Like, you gotta have, like, unless your, like, game is, like, purely, like environmental, like, it's just a dungeon or something. Like, there's always, you know, like, you gotta have somebody who's in charge. And you gotta have somebody who's, like, the opposing force, right?
Yeah.
Like, why are we doing all this stuff? I mean, I guess you don't need to. You can have, like, just a treasure hunt. But even then, like, you know, maybe have the rival team or something.
Well, even if you get, like, the mob of wolves, there's the alpha wolf. You know, someone's got to be directing the action.
Yeah.
If there's a conflict, again, the opposition has to be organized somehow. Otherwise, it's a roguelike.
right. And narrative, even then... Yeah, like, and even in some roguelikes, there's, like, you know, at least there's, like, the boss monster or something. Like, there's, you know, like, Angband, famously, the plot of Angband is, step one, buy a lantern, step two, kill Morgoth. You know, there's 100 levels of dungeon crawling between you and Morgoth, but, like, in the end, yeah, like, he's down there. So, I think it's, one of the things that I always found really interesting is, like the development of, like, bad guys. Like, before we started recording, I mentioned I grew up playing a lot of, like, fighting fantasy books, and in the very earliest one, like the literal first one, Warlock of Firetop Mountain, the whole plot is that you have to go into the dungeon and you have to find the wizard and kill him. And it's and the book, like, forgets to explain, like, what the problem with this wizard is. Like, he has a dungeon, so he's probably, like, a little sketchy, and there's, like, zombies and stuff in there, and he has orcs and goblins. But, like, that could just be, like, cheap labor. Like, they never actually come around and tell you, like, why you, like, for all you know, you're, like, the bad guy. You're rolling into this guy's place, like, wrecking all his wizard business and, like, friggin' killing him. By the time the second book came around, they made a big deal of how the wizard this time around is, like, building an evil army, and he's gonna, like, invade your place. So it's, like, a preemptive gank. So, you know, but it's good to, like, come up with a reason, like, oh, hey, why are we worried about this dude?
Yeah, yeah, I mean, the army of undead, the necromancer with the army of undead is classic.
Yeah, that's the problem, because this dude has, like, four zombies, and that's not really, like, invasion material, you know? If you just have four zombies in a cave, like, I'm going to chalk that up to just being, like an experiment, like, you're testing the spell,
yeah.
You know?
Yeah, totally. Like, he's working out some kinks.
Yeah, you know, labor, or you just need some, like, yeah, you know, like, zombies don't ask for raises. They don't unionize. Like, you got it pretty good. All you got to do is, like, replace an arm here and there. So, yeah, we obviously need a little more. But I think that's also, like, the, you know, like, very early, like, fantasy tends to have this, like, amoral outlook where you kind of just there, like, get loot. And this guy has the loot, and therefore, like, he's the opponent. But that doesn't really make him, like, a villain, right?
Yeah, but it also kind of plays into, like, the classic medieval culture thing where there's the creepy, weird guy that people really kind of don't like very much, and you're going to sort it out. People don't want to know how you sort it out, but it's going to be dealt with, and he's not going to be around.
The sorting it out might be, like, with an actual sword. You know. But as we... move along in, like, gaming history, and this is funny because, like, you know, like, fantasy has basically, like, never escaped Tolkien, right?
Right.
And Tolkien famously had some pretty important bad guys.
Yeah.
You know, like Sauron and his granddaddy Morgoth were kind of a big deal. Like Morgoth was one of the like creative forces of like the cosmos. You know, Sauron, who's like the sufficiently big enough evil to like tie three movies together, or books if you're so inclined. There were some books too. Did you know that? But I hear they added a bunch of music numbers to the books and to apply to like mass market appeals. So I don't know if that'll catch on. You know, Sauron was the big bad guy, and he was like the like lieutenant of the original dude. So he was still evil enough to like, you know, lay waste and dominion to Middle Earth. And he was only like the sword bearer of the original evil guy.
I mean, it's that's, I mean, just classic religion mythology, good versus evil, light versus dark, all that sort of
Yeah,
metaphorical fun.
like the evil with a capital E, right? Like we've talked about that a little bit before, of like, you know, like motivations for bad guys. But I
Yeah,
think for your like
alignments.
main, basically, right? But I think for like your main like boss villain, if you're gonna have one, I think that's an area where like you can go a little like black and white and be like, okay, this dude is evil because he's really into kicking puppies and invading dimensions or whatever. You know, like I think a lot of times players like enjoy having, doesn't mean he has to be like one-sided. Like he should still have motivations and ideas like what he's doing. But I think facing off against a guy who like it feels good to beat and finally get one over on, I don't think that's like a bad thing at all, you know?
Yeah, I mean it's a reason for the like the farther back in the background you can set him, like the more obstacles you can put in the player's way, and through that obviously a progression is being created, and the more twisted and strange the road gets to like getting to the greater conflict, like I think the better it generally is for me.
Yeah, I think so. And I think that's a really good point too, that 'cause it's like any twist or like surprise or whatever, you know, like you only get one chance to do the reveal. So if you like blow it too soon and everyone knows what's going on right away, then you kind of miss some of the anticipation of like, oh, that was what all this stuff was leading up to. But if you like wait too long, then it becomes like a last minute, like, okay, like it turns out it's this dude we've never heard of. All right, like let's go find him. You know? So it's like you gotta like land in the middle, so you have a little bit of like tension and build up. But you can also like, okay, now we've know what we're dealing with and why he's mad at the world. Now we can like start working against him.
Yeah, I mean that's I mean just what you said right there, making it like the primary villain mysterious initially, and like having the players like uncover clues to actually get to him. That's I didn't necessarily think about it like that, but that's definitely a good way to move forward if you have like a villain, you have like destructive incidents occurring that are totally mysterious, I guess.
Oh, they appear mysterious, like with the information you got.
So everyone's freaking out because the cows are dying. No one knows why.
I think this is something where it probably helps to like actually like plan it out on paper, you know, like you sketch out like, okay, like if the villain has like these and these force, like, you know, every villain has like a henchman, like his lieutenant, he's got his minions, he got some less capable minions. And like if you sketch out like, okay, these guys are gonna go here and they're gonna do that. So you always know like what's going on. Like it all kind of fits together because you're gonna have like the one like sharp-eyed player who's gonna figure out like, wait a minute, he couldn't have done that because that dude was over there. We saw him there. You know, so you have to like, I think it helps to in the last big game I ran that had like clear like good and evil, there were two main villains who were squabbling with each other, And one of the things I did each session was after we were done playing and I knew what they wanted to do next, I would like sketch out what each of the villains was doing, where they were sending like agents or troops or whatever. And a lot of that never like amounted to anything because it just happened like in places they didn't go and never visited. That's fine. But it meant I knew like the process that was happening and I could kind of play it up realistically, you know, and if they cross paths with somebody who should be there. And you don't have to like track every single like dude, you know. Like if the evil necromancer has like 10,000 Nazgul, you don't have to like map out a database of all of them, you know. But just having a general idea, like, because it'll, I think so, even if a lot of it never gets discovered, it will help the whole thing just feel more realistic. Like, I think there's, you can always kind of feel if the GM is trying to bullshit you a little bit,
Yeah,
you
that's
know.
true.
So if you know, like, okay, since you're here, this thing happened over there, and that means you're going to get a letter saying, oh shit, like undead dinosaurs. You know, it just helps the world like feel bigger and more realistic.
Right. Well, yeah, that's cool if you have you're talking to someone at an inn and you hear about events, bad things happening somewhere completely unrelated to what you're doing, then yeah, like
Right. So now you have like, oh, do we need to go like deal with that? Or
right.
is the thing we're doing already like more important? You get all of this, all these threads that people can kind of pick on, especially if you want something that's more like open-ended, where the players have like, oh, okay, we have like all these different options we can do, but we also want to do like these other two things. Like, which ones do we actually do?
That's cool. It's more work. Sure, it can be kind of frustrating to create things that people will not interact with, but there's
Yeah,
value
you
in
have to
that too.
like, yeah, I think you have to like enjoy the process a little bit. I guess you can view it as like it's almost like a side game, right?
Sure.
You know, that you're just playing on your own. You just have to be careful you don't get like too carried away with it. You know, in the end, like your wonderful, beautiful creation is there to like be kicked over and ransacked by the players.
Sure.
So what would you say, if you were going to take a stereotypical like evil wizard lord, but you were going to put a little bit of a twist on him, some of the players might not expect, what might you pull out, either about his plans or about the wizard himself or his like how he goes about things or
Give him weird quirks. Maybe he's actually stupid. And
like he's like an idiot wizard.
yeah. I like considering the basic qualities I would normally associate with this kind of archetype, and just tweaking one of them and seeing it's like dominoes. Like if we, or I don't know, shoots and let. Ladders or something where like you twist one part and you see how the rest of the structure kind of reorganizes. So maybe he is an idiot who got a hold of like some sort of artifact that gave him a great deal of power, or he's really young and inexperienced and
Like he
arrogant.
stumbled into like the gem of divine power or something. So now like one of the gods has to do his bidding. And he's just like
Exactly.
a shithead, like, you know, 16-year-old
Exactly.
with all the foresight and like motivations of like a shithead 16-year-old.
That could kind of become like a Wizard of Oz sort of thing where he's
Oh
putting using the power to like put out this epic front, but he's really, yeah,
yeah. Yeah,
total
he's
goof.
That would actually be really good.
And everyone buys into it, including his minions, or like all of them are completely bamboozled and sucked into like this great mirage he's kind of created.
Yeah, that would
He
be really
really just
cool.
wants to get laid.
Yeah, like he's a 16-year-old. He wants to like do something cool, and he wants to get with the girls. But the gem of divine power doesn't really like teach how to talk to people, so he's just angry and frustrated at the world. Yeah, that would be really good. The one I had in mind was, I was thinking about it, but I don't know if it would really work, because normally you always have that, like, it's the like the good, like the good kingdom or the mayor or whatever, who's hiring adventuring parties to go deal with a villain. And it would be interesting if you had a situation where the villains were hiring adventuring parties, but they're like evil adventuring parties. So like gangs of like hobgoblins and stuff that are roaming around the land. They're carrying out like quests and stuff, but like for the villains. So you have to like go deal with those. You know, you have to hunt down these like parties that are trying to like find evil artifacts and stuff. And they're doing all like the hero type stuff, but just villain type stuff instead.
Sure. All the
You know, so
results
you.
are wrong.
Yeah, you know, something like that, or just like kind of subvert the structure. Like you're the characters all like working for like the city guard or something. Like you're working for the man. You got to fill out like reports. But you also have like the resources of the man. If you can like find the evidence of what's going on, then you can bring out like the army and stuff. But you have to do it by the book. Like it's a police procedural.
Right. Interesting.
You know, which might be too wild. I don't know. It would probably be a lot of work, but I think it could be really fun. Maybe a little more lighthearted. Like it wouldn't be. I guess that's another question with a villain. Like, it depends on like your campaign. Like, how like deathly serious is it? Right? You know,
Yeah.
is it like really grim and this dude is, or are you trying to like tug people's heartstrings? Is this dude has like a tragic past, or is he just like, you know, he's kind of a comical like asshole?
So how would you make it a comical asshole?
For a comical asshole, I think you have to go at the motivation. One of my favorite, one of my favorite video game series is the Disgaea games. They are very Japanese,
Right.
and I think it's Disgaea 3 where your character, because in all of the games you play like the basically like the offspring of like the demon lord of one of the hell dimensions.
Right.
And in the third game, the reason that you want to overthrow and destroy your father so you could become the new demon lord is that he took away your video game console for some and confiscated your game, or he deleted your save games or something. So I think if you want to make it comical, he has to have a motivation that's like kind of petty. And then you play out like the actual description of the villain. You just go like as balls to the wall, like hip Manowar album cover as you can. You know, he's
Sure, sure.
the Slayer Lord of Caracas or something. But his motivations are basically like his girlfriend snubbed him and he's never gotten over it. And now he's just like, you know, like a whiny ass.
Yeah.
Like subverted a bit, like or you can give him dumb minions, like you know, like he's got everyone likes playing up at orcs as being like dumb, like goons.
Right.
So you can embrace that a little bit, you know. Play up like, yeah, this guy would have invaded the world, but his armies are just like, you know, they fall apart from like infighting, or they wander off to invade the wrong country, or
Nice. They're terrible at navigation, just that by itself. Like, they can't find their way out of
like
their bedroom.
you can. Right, like you can rally an army of like 5,000 of these dudes, but who knows where it shows up. Which is why orcs get a reputation for being like unexpected, like pillaging hordes, because they weren't supposed to be here, but as far as they're concerned, this is the right place and we're gonna fight. So you just go. Yeah, just like embrace stuff like that, or like half like all of his lieutenants like hate each other and they spend more time like ambushing and sabotaging each other than they ever do like fighting the heroes, which would actually be cool because then you can like play them out against each other if you find like the two that hate each other, because one of them is like the demon avatar of like beauty and the other is the demon avatar of like rage or something, so they don't get along.
There you go.
So you can play them off against each other and like watch them like level the bad guy's castle or something.
Yeah. It
So
gets kind of wacky, but it can be really epic at the same time.
yeah, I think you can kind of. We talked about anime before, and I think you can kind of embrace some of those ideas. Like, it can be big, and it almost works better if it is big and over the top. Like, everything is epic and large scale, but without like being like super grim. You know, like all the times when we talk about epic stuff, people think like, oh, Game of Thrones was all like very austere and grim and joyless.
Right, right, right. Or like a Black Company where it kind of gets just morbid.
Yeah, like it's almost like played to the point where like it's funny because it is so like piss stained and knee deep in the mud.
Yeah.
Right. But then there's also Black Company does a pretty good job of it. Like it's it mostly stays just on the line, and it knows when it wants to like push you over. that's usually when the descriptions start getting like really vague about what's happening, because then your mind fills in like the horrible shit.
Yeah.
But then there's also like one of the wizards, like in the first book, there's like the two wizards in the company that are always like fucking with each other. Mm-hmm. And like one of them like summons up like a whole bunch of like little monkeys that like are showing their asses, but they all have the face of the other wizard.
Mm-hmm, right.
And they're just doing like stupid shit like that, which people would totally do. Like real people who could use magic would do that. Right. You know, but then at the same time, it's, you know, like it's terrifying and miserable and everything is soaked in piss and blood because that's the world of the Black Company. You know?
Yeah.
I forget what they're named, like the Taken or whatever they're called, like the like lieutenants that the evil empress has are like some of the most terrifying creatures in any fantasy book I've read almost.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they're so like understated, they just have this aura of dread and everyone's like pissing themselves whenever they're around.
Yeah, yeah. That's really hard to pull off. Like, yeah.
That is really difficult, yeah.
It's like I think professional if you're, writing level where it's like the understated dread sort of thing. I wouldn't.
Yeah, that's really hard in a game, I think. Yeah. Now, in a game, you do have some things you can cheat with because you have the ability to threaten the player characters in a way that an author can. But we have an assumption that most of the characters make it because otherwise the book can't end. Yeah. You know? Sure. So because things are happening like live and there isn't a determined outcome, I think you have a little bit of an edge in that sense in a game.
So the threats are more legitimate.
Yeah, I think they can get a value because in addition to what's happening in the story, there's also the fact that like my dude might die or lose their weapon or whatever.
Sure, yeah.
I mean, there's the old joke of... you know, if you want to make a horror game, don't try to scare the character, scare the player with something. You know, that's why, like, old D&D monsters that could, like, drain levels were so terrifying. Because, like, you can kill my character, that's fine, but don't take my fucking experience levels.
Yeah,
like, serious. It took 12 adventures, 12 dungeons to get to level 9. Like that shit is not on. And everyone has had that feeling, right? When you're playing like a video game or something, there's like the really like scary monster because it'll just wreck your face.
Right.
You know, like playing Dark Souls and some asshole like hops out of a cupboard and like, but he's been hiding for like 1,000 years just to get you.
Yep. You just happen to be the sucker that stumbles in at that moment in time.
Right, like 1,000 years ago, this dude climbed into this cover, like, because he was a fucking joker. Like, all right, I'm losing my mind. I'm going to turn into a zombie. I'm going to hide in here. And some asshole is going to come by, and I'm going to fuck your shit up. And it'll be totally worth it. And he sits in that cover and, like, gibbers to himself for, like, 1,000 years. And then you come by, and he jumps up and, like, what an ass.
Totally.
Speaking of video games, you know what I've always wanted to do in a RPG fight? I don't think I've ever been able to, is a multi-stage boss fight. We have to, like RPGs, JRPGs especially, always have these, right? Where you
right.
Fight the boss, and then, like, there's a cutscene, and he, like, now he's pissed because you, like, wounded him or whatever. So now he turns into, like, a hell demon, and now you gotta fight him again.
Yeah, they morph into something else, like the level, the environment changes up, things are destroyed, or like new platforms suddenly rise up out of the ground or the ocean or whatever. Yeah,
like suddenly there's a lava like fountain or something, and the music changes, and now this guy is. I always wanted to try and do that somehow, you know, but I don't think it's ever like. I mean, I guess it's just you have to like. Be careful it doesn't feel like cheap, you know, like, oh, and like you burn all your resources and spells, and the GM sits there with a shit-eating grin and is like, all right, well, here's the real fight. This guy rolls out his, like, giant mace or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the balancing aspect gets difficult.
Yeah.
I mean, you could make it seem like, oh, these are pushover, but maybe not.
Right, right, right. You know, like, let them get a little overconfident. Like, oh, shit, this was easy. I was really worried about this. And then, like, then he comes back. Totally. Or you could do it like, okay, like, this dude, you know, he transforms into his, like, true form or whatever. And it just wrecks the entire place. Like, the whole castle is collapsing. We got to get out. And now you have to, like, come back and, like, fight him for real.
Yeah. Once you found, yeah.
Like, once you've gotten better weapons or whatever.
Yeah, have... break up the battle into multiple situations or multiple scenes.
That would work. Yeah. I think that would work really well, actually. And that way it's like, because then you have some buy-in, like, okay, we're coming back to like finish this job. Like, that makes it cool.
Yeah. Plus, in a sense, you could set it up where the players technically completed their mission, but this new situation is kind of beyond the scope. So,
yeah. So they don't. Nobody feels like cheaters or like, oh, we got cheaped out by something we couldn't like do anything about.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
You know, you still get your rewards, you still achieve what you're trying to do, but now the villain has to like go like lick his wounds and regroup as well.
So you can come back. Yeah, or like technically like you destroyed kind of the situational threat, but now the boss is like this super demonic evil form that's just concentrated and stuck in the location of the fight, so you just kind of have to exterminate that before that can spread its other threats. That
right, so when you come back, like now the whole dungeon or temple or whatever is like crawling with like demonic infestation and like crazy tentacles coming out of the walls, and you know, it's like bad for business.
Heck yeah. But it's all stuck there because it's like this over, it's just overwrought, kind of like the Akira thing where it just becomes the blob.
The other thing you could do is if your villain has like, you know, like he has an evil demon sword or something, like the evil more evil version of Stormbringer. And when you kill him, like the demon like takes over his body or something. So it's not technically the same villain, but there's still like a continuity there.
Yeah. Yeah, that works. Totally the same thing.
Mm-hmm. In the last big fantasy game I ran, we kind of had like a, not really, well, it was kind of a bait and switch, I guess. So the whole plot was there were two like ancient evil lords. And they spent most of the campaign dealing with one. And in the middle of a big battle, when they were about to be overrun, they realized that they had found out there was these like agents of some other force out there. And they were investigating things, and they start spotting like undead minions and stuff. So they knew something was amiss. And in the middle of a huge battle, they see this massive undead army bearing down and shattering the enemy force and leaving theirs alone. And they realize, oh shit, there is definitely something going on. And through more investigation, they realize that there are, in fact, a second villain who is a none too pleased because he doesn't want the first guy to be in charge, but he's also like, because he's a necromancer, so he's burned all his energy, and the only way to replenish all that and to replenish his armies is, well, a bunch of you people got to die. So he's still a problem. So they kill the first guy. They finally, you know, after an epic battle, they face down and they send him back where he's supposed to be. And they head out to fight the second villain, and they find his castle, and they're getting geared up for this, like, really difficult dungeon fight. And they get there, and the whole place is a wreck. And they search through, and they find, like, the throne room where they're going to throw down with this dude. And they realize that a third organization has struck and has just killed the bad guy and made their escape for their own nefarious purpose, which end up being a wizard group that they had familiarity with because they had done jobs for them, who had a scheme to cause the whole world to be reborn. So that was like the last minute reveal that, oh shit, like it was one of those like, oh, everything you knew was upside down, now you can like deal with that. Nice. Which went really well, but it could have gone like really poorly too.
Right. I mean, we've talked about that numerous times, about like having the twist end up upsetting people.
Yeah. In this case, the time from like I snatched the fight away from them to them, because it was pretty much just a couple of sessions after that that they got to like to the big final confrontation where they got to like set things to rights. So it worked well because they didn't like feel like they were being dragged along. And by then,
Sure.
we were all kind of like ready to finish the campaign. Like the characters were kind of maxed out for their stats and stuff. But it was a cool twist since it worked in sort of subverting their expectations because they were assuming it was just going to be like, okay, after we had this like big epic dungeon crawl to kill the other dude, we're going to have to go do the same thing with this guy.
Yeah, well, it
So,
sounds like it's they think they're just gonna finish off like a solid kind of mano a mano wizard battle kind of thing, but then you twist the thing around, bringing in the third party, and they like totally up the stakes by tenfold, which is really cool.
Yeah, that was exactly it. So instead of being, and that was the whole point of like the previous two enemies were both like had fairly like tangible agendas, whereas this wizard group had like this cosmic like plan for basically like rewriting like the rules of the universe. So it was kind of a cool like and kind of like spacey, like out there, It's like the end
Nice.
of like a JRPG when the bad guy tells you the plot, and you're like, what?
Sure.
Okay, so I guess you're technically the planet Jupiter in human form, and you're okay, whatever. Like, can we fight?
You just gotta go.
And then like, you have like depending on how it ends. I had actually written out, and I don't usually do this, but for this, I had actually written out like three or four like possible endings that could happen depending on what they did in the final
Oh,
confrontation.
cool.
So that was kind of cool.
Nice.
But I guess that's a good like next point is like when you have your villain, you've put together like who's in charge of all this, and what is he like? How do you actually defeat the villain? Is it intended the players like roll up and like sword fight him? Do they need to like gather an army? Do they need to like find the MacGuffin? There's always MacGuffins to be found, right?
It's
Like,
fun.
how do
It works,
you?
man.
I
There's a
think
lot
part
of
of why it
like,
works. Oh, go ahead, sorry.
I personally think it can work in like building up the lore of the world. Like you
Yeah, I was
have
gonna
reasons for
say,
that existing and like the people before that used it to do an original thing that was important, and so it's sacred because of that, and all these other people,
right,
value
like
it for.
why all these things, yeah, like why all these things out here? Were they created specifically for this purpose? If so, then that means this dude has been known for like a while, right?
Totally.
And that means we can like find, books that talk about him in like, the second age or whatever. Or was this stuff all made for like something else? And in that case, like, do we have like a recurring problem of like supervillains? Like all those questions start raising themselves. Like, okay, why are all these things here? Also, MacGuffins are always like hidden away in places that is not where you're at, because if they were, some asshole would have found them. So they're a good
Sure.
excuse to like travel the map and like invent some new countries or go to like cool places on the world map.
Yeah.
There is a you can also so be mean. This is too mean to do, but in one of the fighting fantasy books, City of Thieves, you have and it's literally like an undead wizard you have to defeat, and you get told at the beginning that you have to go to this town that's full of like thieves and assholes, and you have to find three items. You find a wizard there, and he tells you there's three items you need to find in the town and mix together, and they will give you like a weapon or something that'll like dispel his magic so you can fight him, right? And there's like a couple more items you also have to get. It ends up being this shopping list of like six or seven things you have to find to get. And when you finally get out of the town, if you survive, so if you don't have all of the shit you were told to find, then you can't complete the book. You're just fucked. But it gets worse because there's, I think, three items that you have to get that are just, you can't go without. But there's also the three items that you have to combine to mix your magic potion. When you get out of town, you get a magical message from the wizard who's basically kind of admitting that, like, he's kind of old and senile and he wasn't paying attention. So he fucked up. You only need two of the ingredients, but he doesn't remember which ones, and you have to prepare it in advance. So you have to pick two of your three things, write down which ones they were, and when you get to the end of it, you find out if you're right or not. If not, you get to get fucked because you can't win if you have the wrong one.
Good Lord.
Yeah, those things were sadistic. Now, you shouldn't be that mean in a RPG campaign, but it is an open question of what happens if, like, you find the MacGuffin and they are like on their ship heading back, and the bad guys show up. You know, they send like dragon riders to get their MacGuffin back, and one of the players decides, figuring that okay, it's worse if they get it, so we're gonna throw it in the ocean. What do you do now? Like, the one ring just went in the fucking drink. Do you let them, like, oh shit, you just get to get fucked? Is there a backup option? Do you create another MacGuffin that's like worse or more difficult to get, but they can go get that one? Or what do you do?
What I would do is create like a whole make the just set up a new quest to get some different stuff together to like overcome the hazard to get the MacGuffin back.
Right, like you have to find like a way. Now you gotta like go make friends with a merman so that they
Exactly.
can take you down to like the underground city where your ship ended up. Because it turns out you threw it out in the water where all the shark men live, and they've taken it to put in their evil temple.
Exactly.
So
So that
yeah,
just
actually,
is
that's really cool.
new world, new people to meet, new wacky. Like the more difficult the situation, like the ocean is perfect because it's exactly that. You have to interact with a totally new group. They probably are like, go jump off a cliff, and you gotta like endear yourself to them somehow so that they'll actually help
Yeah, they have
you.
no
And then,
reason to care about you. You're some land dudes. Like, what
right,
is
all the
none of
land.
this matters to us? Like, we're just minding our own business down here. You know, like, you want to go root around our holy temple? I don't think so, buddy. So, yeah, so actually, that ends up being pretty good. Plus, it's pretty cool. You know, if you do it well, it's one of those moments where, like, the players wonder, was it planned all along that we were supposed to throw this in the water to have this cool adventure? You know, like, a lot of times when you're playing, you wonder, like, how much of this was actually planned and how much of this was just, like, put together on the fly? You know,
That's part of the art.
when it works really well, yeah, and everyone is, like, clicking and jiving.
But I mean, at that point, it would be kind of difficult because I would say, like, I would be like, well, this session is done, and we
Yeah,
have to,
like,
like, I'm gonna figure this out for you guys, but and we're gonna proceed, but the session is done now,
Yeah,
and
or like you get to a point, like, okay, like after this, you fight off the dragons, you end up like in town, you can like sell your loot and you can buy new weapons, and then next time we're gonna. One thing I do a lot when it's kind of when there's like open-ended stuff is that it always try to end the session with them saying, okay, here's what we want to do next, unless there's like an obvious thing. Because that way you're not like fumbling around for it next time. So, like, okay, you guys have like a bunch of different things you can do. Which ones do you want to pursue? And they say it. And then, like, it's kind of the social contract. Okay, like, there's no backing out of that. You can't fuck around now. If you guys say that we're going to the tower, the next time we're going to the tower. You know, and sometimes they just want to, like, okay, we actually just want to, like, lay low and see what happens next. Like, okay, in that case, you're trusting me to push the story ahead, and here's what happens.
I'm a pretty big advocate for railroading people.
Yeah, like, at least, like, to the next station, then they can go look around. You know, like, if it's completely open-ended, I tend to lose interest pretty fast. And there is a, I haven't found a good word for this yet, but there's a specific player type who isn't necessarily interested in like a fully open-ended, like they don't want to like make their own story. That's not fun. What they want to do is they want to see where the story is going, but they still want to be able to like make some decisions. So like if we have to, you know, go to the temple and get the amulet back, they still want to be able to like make a plan for how to get the amulet back. But they don't want to like drive the story themselves. They want to see what story is going on, which is very incompatible in a group that's like very, you know, kind of open world hex crawly.
True.
Speaking of
I don't know, like I
sort of
think
like
I tend to a bit more towards that just because I've seen enough games get broken and derailed. So I'm like, okay, cool. Let's
yeah, I think I wonder also how much of it is like when people started gaming, because there's this tendency to talk about how like people who started like in the 70s, games were more like open-ended and it was more like, oh, okay, we'll just kind of like point at the map and go there. And people who started gaming kind of when we did, I think the tendency had shifted a little bit to be more story-driven and more of a sort of concrete experience. So it could also be like some of that. I think there's also a little bit of, I guess this is a tangent, but we'll indulge it. There's also a little bit of like social contract too. Like if you're sitting down to like play Dungeons and Dragons and you know like the GM said, oh yeah, I just like bought a copy of like Temple of Elemental Evil, then like you're sitting down with the expectation of playing Temple of Elemental Evil. So if the GM says, okay, you've arrived at this town, and you know there's like an evil dungeon nearby, we're probably gonna go into the town and we're gonna go into the evil dungeon. Like that's not the time to like, you know, go collect goblin skulls or something. You know, like it's just the general, if you know that this is what's happening. I always get irritated when I see the stories online, people like, you know, oh, I prepared like a 17 level dungeon and then the players decide to go create a flower show instead. Like, okay, cool, but we're not playing like flowers and budgets. We're playing fucking Rune Quest. Can we go quest for runes, please?
Yeah, totally. Is that, would you say that's a newer thing? I've seen some weird stuff.
Yeah, I mean, people did it back then too. So I don't know if it's newer specifically. I think it kind of like gets circulated as a story. Like you'll see people kind of talk about it. So I wonder if it's one of those things where it's like it is more of a story online because it's funny than it's like a legit thing. But I've definitely been in games back in the day with people who figured that like are bored now and they were just like, they thought they could just like wander off in the middle of everything and like go like, you know, have the GM run like a separate adventure at the same time. Like, no. You know, like that's just wasting like everyone's time at the table. Like, get out of here.
I mean, you bring up an interesting point though, because I like a primary villain is like gonna be part of a narrative usually. Or like how could someone set up a game with like a primary villain that's not gonna be narrative based, I guess?
Well, I think what he could do is like a move and counter move. So like the players decide what they want to do and we play that out. And then the villain's gonna take an action. And it doesn't have to be like strictly back and forth, but like the villain is like trying to do stuff at the same time. So like if we go out to the old abandoned mine and go search that, and the villain, you know, the GM writes down that the villain is gonna like try to like cast a spell on the mayor of the town so he comes under like domination. And those two actions don't interfere with each other, so they both just kind of happen. But if we find out, okay, so the mayor is like under magic control because he's been acting really weird, then we can go like deal with that. And so I think you could do it that way. If it's almost like not like a opposed game, but like a little bit. So I think you could do it that way where it's all like very open-ended. Like the GM knows what the villain wants to achieve, and then you kind of like play it out that way. I think that could be really interesting. But you, again, you'd have to kind of like be into it, and I think you'd have to like trust your, I mean, you should trust your GM, right? One thing I wanted to bring up from a game I had put together called Ballad of the Longbow, which is kind of a Robin Hood-ish thing. Because I was tinkering with like, how do you get like that kind of like classic adventure movie vibe where the villain can always like pull out like some stupid plan that the players will go like, come on, dude, that's bullshit. Like he did not have a squad of like knights with him. So what I came up with was the idea that just like the players in the game get their own abilities, villains have abilities too, and you can pick a couple of them. And they are things like, and they can only be used like once in the adventure or once in the campaign, but you can have an ability like it was a trap. And when you use this, you tell the players, the villain announces to the heroes that whatever the situation you're in right now was actually a cunning trap. And he suddenly gets like, he basically gets like two soldiers for every hero in the party. And then they have to, you have to add a way of escaping. Or you can, use it to one of the abilities is kidnap, and you can kidnap somebody who's near and dear to the heroes, so they now have to go like rescue them. Even if they should be like in a secure place, you can come up with a bullshit explanation for how they got it.
Nice.
So it's basically like it's just straight out of movies, but it's a way of deliberately saying like, okay, this is kind of a movie-based game, and this stuff totally works. But it only works so many times, you know, once you're through these things, then yeah, you use stuff in.
Sounds really fun.
Yeah, it was a cool little thing. When we played the Doctor Who role-playing game a couple years ago, it has something called story points where you can kind of like make up bullshit, but depending on how like dramatic the bullshit is, it costs a certain amount of story points. And you get them like every so often. So like if your character's like good with the gadgets, you can like make up some sort of like gadget your character could have, and it's only a couple of points. But if you want to have something like really unpredictable happen, you have to pay a lot for it. Hmm. And some of the villains get story points too. And we had a moment where they were on a ship that was being menaced by a Dalek, you know, the principal like evil tin cans. And it was like, I forget the whole chain of events, but it was basically like flying around outside the ship, and they came up with this plan that they were going to like jury-rig some explosives, and they were going to like get somebody in a spacesuit to like shoot up and like attach the explosives and blow this thing like into the cosmos. Mm-hmm. And as they did that, I announced that by spending X amount of story points, I made sure it was like enough points for it, that the Dalek had been fitted with like anti-explosive detectors and immediately started like shooting at them, so they had to abandon their plan. And again, it was a bullshit moment, but it was very like appropriate to like Doctor Who because stuff like that happens all the time.
Sure.
And because it's points driven, you only get to do it so many times before you're done, and you just have to rely on like the dice and whatever skills it has. Which is like, as a GM, there's like, you know, there's no reason you can't just say whatever, like you can come up with anything, but the players will call bullshit on you. So adding like a meta resource like that gives a way of like quantifying the bullshit, which I think can be like really interesting in sort of like if you're playing a game that's maybe not like so simulation-y.
Mm-hmm.
There's another called Coriolis, which is a sci-fi game, and I haven't read that closely, but it has a thing where you can like draw on, there's like a resource you can use at any time. You get like bonus dice or rerolls or whatever. But every time you do, you have to give like bad fate points to the GM. And he has like a list of things he can do. so like if you miss a gunshot, it like hits something vital in like the machinery on your ship or something. Or he can like have like reinforcements show up unexpectedly and stuff like that. But you're giving those points to him because every time like you fuck up one of your dice rolls and like, oh shit, we really have to do this. So you can like take those extra dice or whatever, get rerolls. But you're kind
of trading like for hero points and or getting kind of like hero points in exchange for bad karma.
Yeah, exactly. You know, like, okay, we really need to do this, so we're gonna win now, but now the GM gets to like, you know, be an asshole later.
Nice.
because we did this, which I think is like really, I don't always want stuff like that, but it's really cool. It's very like fun. And again, it's a thing where it's like, okay, like you get to like break the logic of the situation a little bit based on the game rules.
Right, right. And I can add humor and levity and reminds people it's just a game.
Yeah, it is. In a way, like, it's very board gamey almost, you know. It's like, okay, like, the GM has rules, too, which is an interesting idea, because that's always, like, in every book, it's like, oh, the GM's word is law, or whatever, you know, the golden rule.
Right, right.
So it's saying, like, well, yeah, but the GM should still kind of, like, play on an even field. So it's an interesting way of, like, working around that.
Yeah.
Or to just create, like, genre emulation. Like, again, in, like, Doctor Who, you expect, like, the villains to come up with like a stupid plan or have some sort of gadget that happens to counter like your particular equipment. So now you have to like come up with something.
Sure. Kind of like a crisis point where they just pull BS out of thin air to
thwart. Yeah, like as long as you can like narrowly like justify it based on like babbling about the setting or something. You know,
right.
Like it doesn't have to. You can literally invent like a whole new thing that nobody's heard of because it's Doctor Who. We do this all the time. guess what? Kind of like this was
mustache twisting kind of, ha ha, foiled you yet again.
Right. Like you get to monologue. I think I just gotten the book for a game called Troubleshooters, which is sort of like spy detective RPG that's comic book based. And one of the rules in there, if I don't remember wrong, is that you can't interrupt a monologuing villain. Like if they start monologuing about their plan, you have to let them finish.
That's awesome.
So yeah, you know, like, and it's just like genre emulation because it's based on like Tintin and comics like that. So you know, when you show up, you can't just like gun down the bad guy. You got to hear what his plan is and how he's gonna like destroy the world, and then you know you can do stuff, or you can say you were doing stuff while he was monologuing. So that's totally in character. That game also explicitly rewards you for being captured by the bad guys. Like that's one of the biggest ways of getting, I think that, I forget if they call them story points or what they call them in that game, but so if you're like low on resources, just like get in a fight and get captured.
Nice.
So yeah, it's a wonderful game. Everyone should pick it up. It's by it's being distributed in English speaking countries by Modiphius, my overlords, but it's original by Helmgast in Sweden.
Cool.
But it is available in English. I guess that's sort of like a little bit meandering, but kind of rounds out some thoughts about villains, villain types, and what you can kind of do with the concept of the villain and in the context of like your story, right?
Right. So, you know, we start out with a basic kind of wizard who just wants to kill what's ever in front of them. And then we have the more epic kind of world-changing bad guys and the possibilities of transformation, bait and switch things that game masters can throw in to kind of like expand on the conflict at the end or kind of send it off in a different path. So
there are a lot of things. And conversely, you could have a villain that's like really local. You know, if you're playing like a really like down to earth, like gritty fantasy game, your villain might literally just be the evil baron who lives like one county over.
Sure.
You know, if you really want to get into it, it's more like the Game of Thrones vibe again. Like sometimes,
right.
You know, like in the end, I guess like the definition of villain is just like, or the villain is like, he's against you and he kind of wants to like piss on your potatoes.
They're very happy to do harm.
Yeah, like, you know, like he has reasons to oppose you, or you have reason to oppose them. They're probably a bit of a dick, and yeah, they have resources to oppose you. So it's not just, you can't just directly roll up and like stab them in the gut.
Right. Yeah. So, yeah. Totally.
That sort of sums it up. Do you have any nerdery you've been up to lately? We haven't done one of those segments in a little while.
I mean, there's Dune. I saw Dune. Yeah. I mean,
this is where everyone is going to unsubscribe, I think.
Right. I we're talking about it earlier. I don't know.
Mixed feelings, I think, was the...
Yeah, I have mixed feelings, but then again, I have, like, I'm a PKD head, so, like, I have my own set of standards, I guess. And
I would say that being a Philip K. Dick fan would also make you, like, uniquely suited to, like, poor representations of books in film, because there are so many films inspired by Philip K. Dick, and very few of them are actually, like, based on the book in anything more than a cursory way.
Right. One, but
which one is that?
A Scanner Darkly.
Oh yeah, that one is pretty. Actually, Screamers isn't that far off. The ending is different, but that one is relatively close. But there's definitely some that are like, okay, these were in the same room, but that's as close as it got.
Yeah, totally.
You haven't watched it yet. I still want to. I watched the first episode of Foundation. That looks really cool.
Neat.
And that's another show that like, or book, where it's like, okay, I don't really know how you could even do this, but at least as far as the first episode, it looked really cool. So
I'm just bore people to tears if they went full Asimov.
Yeah, you have to jazz it up. Normally, I'm against that, but in this case, I think it's totally legit. You have to like spiff it up to make it filmable. Otherwise, it's just gonna be because like so much of that series in book form is just like some stuff happens, and then the dudes go and like check the computer, and it says, "Yeah, I told you this stuff was gonna happen."
Yeah, exactly.
You know, and you just kind of go along with it. So, yeah, I don't know. Most of what I've been watching is an awful lot of anime. I've been watching a lot of Macross, The Power of Music. I could fill like a so I watched through because like the original Macross was the basis for Robotech, right? And then there's a bunch of spin-off series. I watched through Macross 2, which is okay. I watched through Macross Plus, which is really, really good.
Yeah.
Macross Zero, which is really, really good. I started Frontier, which is so far pretty good. And then I watched Macross 7, which is so fucking bad that it actually made me like look up if it was like a spoof. Like I think I could fill like 2 hours just complaining about this because it's
When
like
did that come out?
it was kind of I want to say like late 90s. I'm gonna look it up real quick here.
Weird. But I
But it
guess
was
that's
basically
probably after like the original production team was probably well and gone.
94, so yeah, like exactly in the middle of the 90s. What happened? I don't know what happened. Like, apparently, it was like super popular in Japan, so it made bank. But basically, for a franchise that had like kind of like avoided being like super heavy, like anime feeling, like it was anime all along, but it wasn't like really like anime tropey. And Seven just like kicks that all out and says, okay, we're gonna double down on all this. So it has like everything that if you're not into anime, everything in Macross 7 is exactly the reason you're not into anime. It has like super like exaggerated like one-dimensional characters. It had people like floating off the ground, waving their arms, angry. It has like a dude who like flies a giant red robot and dodges gunfire while playing guitar.
Oh,
Because the
God.
guitar is like controlling his mech. And this isn't a franchise that has always like had like a level of like kind of military realism and not like bullshit super robots.
Right.
And of course it has like because like the target audience is part like weeaboos and part like Japanese like sex offenders, so it also like relentlessly sexualizes like a 14-year-old girl and then like repeatedly points out. So I'm not going to say I would let this go, but it would be less distressing if it was like incidental, but they repeatedly point out that she's 14. Like she raises the point she's 14 constantly when her parents are trying to set her up with dates with like adult characters and get the mandatory like bikini scenes and like yeah. And that's not even like where it stops being bad. So I could go on for like fucking hours. We're gonna do like a bonus episode that's just called Ivan Bitches About Macross 7.
I get the point though.
Yeah, it's fucking awful. But the rest of that's the thing. Like, that was why I wasn't like prepared for it because the rest of it is so fucking good. Like,
Right.
the rest of the franchise is just really good. So I've been watching that a lot, and I was enjoying myself. Then I wasn't, and now I'm enjoying myself again. So, but yeah.
Let's
So, and I started replaying Neverwinter Nights because there was a bunch of like the premium scenarios like on sale on GOG. So.
cool. Let's see. I got a independent comic that I thought was pretty rad that you would appreciate. It's called Ghosts of Stalingrad.
Oh, that does sound like it's exactly my jam.
Yeah. It's kind of a Halloween themed sort of thing. It's so like it's you've got a small German squad and a small Russian squad, and they're fighting it out, building the building, and they end up by this church, and like they find horrible demonic stuff in the church, and all of a sudden it turns into like World War II doom. And they're all like
That sounds pretty
panicking, and people
rad.
are getting torn apart by like these crazy wicked monsters.
Right. That sounds super awesome.
It is cool. The art style is kind of more abstract. It's more, it's like it's really rough. It's like a lot of rough line work, and like there's some like color overlap, and it's a trip, man. Like there'll be a monster that'll show up, and it's just like really raw, brutal line work that kind of shows muscles and like scars and tattoos, and then it just flashes into like an explosion of like.
So it's almost like, yeah, kind of like almost like impressionistic, or.
Oh yeah, yeah, very much so. It's like dark, kind of industrial impressionism, especially when it gets when they're like going after the soldiers and chomping them down.
Right, right. Yeah, that sounds super cool.
Yeah.
So definitely sounds worth. There was one, and I didn't write the title down, but it's like a alien invasion comic. It's kind of like War of the Worlds ish, but set during the First World War, where they have like the alien ship like lands right in the middle of like the Battle of Verdun. So you have like dudes rolling around their gas masks and helmets and stuff, and they have to like figure out a truce and deal with all these like giant alien machines and stuff. I don't remember what it's called, but it was one of those again like French comics where like there's only going to be like 4 or 5 issues, and it takes like 8 years between each issue because fuck you. That's how long it takes to draw. The rest of the time, we're just sitting in a cafe and drinking coffee and not drawing our fucking comic.
Dude, like back in the 90s, there were that Image comics were like that. Super detailed, but they put out like 1 every 6 months. So it'd be like,
yeah. You just get to wait. You get 6 months of like waiting and worrying that it's going to be canceled or.
Right, right.
And then finally you get issue 2, and now it's even worse because now you're like invested. Now your hopes are up, and you you can start predicting that you're going to be done with college when the story is over.
Pretty much. Awesome.
But yeah. So yeah, a little nerdery from garbage anime to really cool comics and everything in between.
You know. So
I hope everyone enjoyed the episode, and we will be back at you soon with some new nonsense to talk about and opine on.
Right, a different twist on evil and swords and sorcery and all that sort of fun.
Yeah, maybe the swords are evil. Could be.
Could be. Or they want to tell practical jokes.
That's just Stormbringer. In the Grail Quest Choose Your Own Adventure books, your magic sword is Excalibur Jr., and it can talk to you, and one of its traits is it's afraid of spiders, so it refuses to help you in any fight that's against spiders. You always have to carry a backup weapon. Because you got, like, the shitty teenage version of Excalibur.
Nice.
Alright, ladies and gentlemen.
That can become a whole long conversation itself.
Yeah. All right, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for tuning in. Thank you for sticking with us. If you're new listening, I hope you enjoyed the madness. If you didn't, we offer a full money back guarantee.
Yeah.
And my coffee is both mostly gone and mostly cold, so it is time to close this for the night.
Yeah. We just, I think, not long ago got added on Pandora. We're on Audible and Google Podcasts, Pandora.
Yeah, basically everywhere. So just click on an app. Just click randomly. Like, just download some crap and you can listen to us.
Yep, absolutely.
It's the way of the world. The more different apps and the more different formats, the more confusing it'll be.
Good night.
Good night.